Hello and welcome to Ace Pod episode 3.9, brought to you as always by the law offices of E. Jason Blankenship. We have the full crew here today, although Alex will be joining us later because we're talking football first and he opted out of that, and I don't blame him. But for right now, we've got Connor and Dan. Connor, how you doing, man?
Hey, Ace. I'm doing great, honestly. You know, we're going to get to do my favorite thing later, which is analyze vibes. And, you know, that's there's always a meta vibe when you get to do that. The good vibes on top of the vibes. And I guess this is where I should plug my newsletter. Everybody, if you haven't signed up for my newsletter yet, ConnorRoseSouther.substack.com. It's called A Lonely Impulse of Delight. It's about made-up stories and not about Michigan football.
All very good things. There is a link in the show notes. Please check that out. Dan, how are we doing right now?
Doing pretty good. You know, it's been kind of a slow week from a Red Cedar message board perspective. not a lot going on to me. Unfortunately, with the stoppage of Michigan State basketball, the like outrage meter has gone down, you know, a lot. I'm still really upset that we just like, even if Michigan sucked, I wish we could have beaten them because that would have led to like one of the better Red Cedar message board off seasons, with how bad Michigan State basketball is. So, you know, slow week there, but hopefully, you know, when they start playing and losing games again, it'll speed up. Michigan plays Purdue tomorrow, so, you know, my girlfriend and I get to, I'm excited. I get to, you know, hopefully rub it in my girlfriend's face when Purdue loses, and, you know, maintain dominance in that way.
That's a pretty powerful jinx you just laid down there, man.
Yeah, yeah, that's I hope that one doesn't come back to bite the podcast like everything else we've ever said on this podcast.
Look, it's okay. She doesn't listen to this.
That's good. I also appreciate that when I ask you how you're doing, you comment on how the Red Cedar message board is doing. That's it's an amazing way to respond.
It's really one and the same.
So we're going to talk the mostly partly assembled coaching staff that has, you know, finally been assembled in an extremely timely fashion by Jim Harbaugh here. But first, I have some numbers to read off from today's Michigan-Ohio State women's basketball game. I'm going to start with Michigan's second leading scorer. That was Akenra Johnson. She had 14 points. I'm going to move to Amy Dilk, Michigan's third leading scorer. She had 8 points. Michigan's fourth leading scorer, Haley Brown, had 5 points. There is no fifth leading scorer. Everybody else had zero. Naz Hillman dropped a program record 50 freaking points on 20 of 30 shooting with 10 offensive rebounds, and Michigan still lost.
Oh, man.
Naz Hillman broke her personal scoring record of broke her personal scoring record of 35 points in the third quarter to bring Michigan within 14. They were down 16 at a point in the third quarter, shut Ohio State out for over half of the fourth and didn't give up a field goal until well after that, but just could not for the life of them hit an outside shot. Naz Hillman's job, notably, is not to hit three-pointers. She does not take them. Michigan went 2-for-20 from three in this game. They lose 81-77. This does end their undefeated season, undefeated record atop the Big Ten. Puts them, I believe, currently a game and a half behind Maryland now, because Maryland was 6-0 and Michigan 5-0 heading into this game. A lot of imbalance in the women's Big Ten schedule just because of a even larger number of COVID cancellations, unfortunately, or postponements, at least for the moment, on that side than on the men's side right now. But I had to start off the podcast with that because I watched that on tape delay today and was absolutely dying with it. I think when she hit 50, it was to give Michigan the lead. I mean, Michigan briefly went up late in this game, then presses and gives up a three-pointer on the other end, a big shot for Ohio State to kind of hit back because it really felt like Michigan was going to you know, when you come back from down 16 and you end up right back in it, and you have somebody in the midst of dropping 50, you kind of expect to win. But the jumpers just were not falling at all. But regardless, an absolutely incredible performance from Naz Hillman that had to be noted before we did anything else on this podcast. Unfortunately, anything else now means talking football. So if you want us to skip ahead to the basketball section, I might put some timestamps in here. We'll see if I get around to that. I always forget to do that. But the coaching staff is official on the defensive side of the ball. Michigan obviously is already retaining Jim Harbaugh. We know that. They have officially announced now that the Ravens are out of the NFL playoffs. Their former linebackers coach and apparently at one point defensive coordinator in waiting, Mike McDonald, is Michigan's defensive coordinator. The greatly named Mo Linguist is the defensive backs and co-defensive coordinator's coach. His name is Maurice Linguist, but he has Mo in his Twitter handle. I think that's what he goes by. So I want to call him that because that's a great name. The defensive line coach might draw a bit of controversy around these parts. Hopefully he was held back by Dodd Brown because it's Sean Nua again. Same goes for the linebackers. It's once again Brian Jean Mary. And then there is another new face in the the previously sort of unmanned safeties position. George Hilo replaces Bob Shoup, I guess, if we're considering that a replacement instead of just putting someone where there was no one.
We now have a safeties coach.
Yeah. Yes, there is somebody there. They are with the team. They are around them. That's a good thing for a coach to be, is with the program in a physical, real way. Literally, just be there. It's good.
It's weird. So, like, usually you'll say that, like, it's like a lot of times you'll say, like, oh, well, like, anybody would be better. It's like, no, literally anyone would be better. Like, it, me, you, Brian, like, anyone.
Yeah, I think after a weekend of, like, reading defensive back play for dummies, I could have done more for Dax Hill than Bob Shoup did.
Yeah, they were playing some very like Madden level cover two. And blowing it like Madden was glitching. So yeah, welcome George Hilo to the new safeties position coach. A thing we have not had for a year. It's a beautiful thing. Yeah, so I guess before we get into the offense, because the offense isn't really settled yet. What are your guys' thoughts on kind of like how this defensive staff came together? Obviously, the timing of it was not really ideal, but now that they have this group in place, and that should be the full, complete defensive staff there, is there some added optimism for next year from either of you guys? Dan, I will start with you.
I would say, like, I don't know. This is tough to say because, look, in a vacuum, the people they hired, I guess I'm happy with. You know, I would have liked someone with more. Look, you can probably tell with my stuttering and like sighing that, like, I guess the answer in my heart is truly no. I think that more experienced defensive coordinator is not an unfair criticism. You know, someone like Mike McDonald, you could have had him as I guess they do have him as a co-DC, but he could have been kind of an understudy. You know, maybe you give him a little bit of a pay bump from what he had at the Ravens. There were better DCs on the market that it doesn't really feel like Michigan went after. And, who knows if those coaches rejected Michigan because of, you know, the situation with Harbaugh's contract, which, you know, is a whole other can of worms. But, I think as far as, like, NFL guys go, seems like he's young, seems like he's genuinely well thought of, you know, not just, like, the boilerplate stuff. Like, he really feels like an up-and-comer. And he definitely practices against, a very college offense pretty much every day. Mo Linguist, I would say, is an A+, or, you know, A or whatever. He seems like exactly what you want, you know, young recruiter. at the defensive back coach, and he's already been getting after it in recruiting. Got no complaints there. You know, Nua, you know, I mean, you really hope that we might talk about this a little bit later and just like what, how he was being held back. But, you know, I guess I'm willing to buy that potentially he was told who he could and couldn't recruit by Don Brown. Gene Mary, I'm fine with keeping. He did a good job recruiting. And then Hilo is a definite meh for me. So, I mean, look, like all in all, I think the thing that I still would definitely complain about is just like, this took too long, and they missed out on some legitimate transfer prospects because they decided to, you know, like wait on doing all of this until the Ravens got eliminated from the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good place to end that statement, because I think we do disagree about this to an extent, but we totally agree that it took way too long. Jim Harbaugh did this very weird thing that none of us are ever going to be able to unpack, because Michigan and Harbaugh in particular are such a tight ship, which is like go on vacation for like 5 weeks, drag all of this out, I guess meditate on the sunset in California. But I will say this, I actually have a higher opinion of this approach than I think Dan does. I think Dan covered a lot of the bases very well. Linguist is an A-plus addition to any college staff. We don't know how he is as a coordinator, but as like a recruiter, as a member of staff, A++, any program up to including Bama would be lucky to have this guy, honestly, in that regard. You know, guy like Hilo seems fine. I'll give him a chance. He's young and unproven. You know, Mike McDonald, kind of rising star in the NFL, but again, a black box as far as like what he is as a coordinator. And all that is fair. But here's the thing. The other options that were available to Michigan, when you consider that Marcus Freeman was likely not an option, and other guys we like a lot, like John Heacock, were probably not going to come to what might be a one-year gig. I really think that this is about as good, about as well as Harbaugh could realistically have done, because if you go out and bring in like a Jim Levitt or a Charlie Strong, or, you know, heaven forfend the name that we were all like dreading, Lance Anderson, he of the like 100th ranked Stanford defense or whatever. If that was your DC pick, it just looks like you're not trying. It looks like, why are you even like hanging around the building anymore? Because if you're just doing retreads that were hot 10 years ago, and again, I could rant about this forever and I'll stop. But I do think that bringing in two young NFL guys who might be great and might also not be, so it's a high upside, high downside duo that at least brings some recruiting firepower and brings some youth and some energy to the program. Also really important that one of the key things these guys have to do is reset the culture on the defense, because the defense did not trust the coaches and the players didn't trust each other, and they thus didn't really run a defense last year. So you're giving yourself a chance to correct that. And if the upside pays off, you're gonna look like a genius if you're Jim Harbaugh. If it doesn't, you look like a guy who was gonna get fired anyway. So I think the reasoning here is actually quite sound.
Yeah, no, I really agree with you in terms of just the alternatives were rough at this point, because coaches aren't stupid. They see this extension that Jim Harbaugh signed, and they know that this is a one-year deal and an approve-it deal for both Harbaugh and for anybody on his staff. If you're either looking to use Michigan as a stepping stone right now, or you're looking to make a big splash for whoever comes in next, most likely, because realistically, you're not coming in here and going, I'm going to be here for a long time under Jim Harbaugh. And so for Harbaugh to still go out and hire, of the four guys who have officially been brought in so far, if you include Mike Hart on the other side of the ball as well, the oldest of the four is 36 years old. That's Mo Linguist. Hart's 34, McDonald's 33, which is how old I am. I'm an utter failure. George Hilo is also 33. So this coaching staff is starting to make me feel brutally old. Because I see faces that look like mine in much more accomplished positions. The other name that's being kicked around potentially for being brought into the coaching staff is Ronald Bellamy. And he would be the old man of the new coaching staff at 38 years old. So there is, I think, a real movement to get some fresh ideas in there, which they obviously need. I do like McDonald's background coming from the Ravens, which have been a very forward-thinking NFL franchise for a while, and obviously a run, as I think either Connor or Dan said, I'm sorry for not crediting one of you correctly, run something that's pretty close to a college offense, about as close as you're going to get in the NFL. So that is, I think, a plus. So the defensive staff, obviously a lot to be proven on the schematic side of things, I would say, and certainly a certain amount of prove it to be done on the development side of things when you're bringing back Nua and Gene Mary after how the defense looked last year. But given that the defense's problems were, I would say, holistic, the hopes are that with McDonald, and I guess Linguist partially in charge, you have better organization and you know, a better buy-in and the you know, a more modern approach and a better defense because of all that.
Yeah, I guess I want to underline this to make, I want to make a vibe statement here because that's my job, and just say that if you consider that the context here is that Michigan's vibes, not only to us as fans but to players and other coaches and other programs, are mediocre at best right now, then I think if you give us that handicap with the vibes, then the vibes around these hires are like, yeah, I would say like an A minus, honestly, because I love Linguist. I'm hopeful for McDonald. I don't know anything about Hilo. And I think, though, that like there is clearly a dose of energy already being injected into the program. I wish we hadn't had to wait a month longer than we should have to see that happening. But like Linguist in particular is already changing just, yeah, the general vibes of recruiting in a way that I think is going to matter. And even if Harbaugh gets fired, if they can bring in some big recruits, that could pay dividends down the line. So I actually feel fairly good about it at that level.
Yeah, this at least seems like a staff that would ease the transition a little bit. And at least the reason that they had to wait a month to put it together was that the Ravens were making a run in the playoffs. So, like, at least there was some success tied to it as opposed to, like, just all being a failure.
Yeah. I will say, I've got two more points to make. I will say that, you know, I think for a while on MGO blog and elsewhere, there was kind of like a little bit of like a roll your eyes when it came to like NFL defensive coordinators, because, you know, you wanted a guy that had seen the college game, just because for so long it was a read option game, it was a spread to run game. And now I think, you know, the best teams that Michigan's going to play are going to be spread to pass, you know, namely Ohio State, really, you know, which is what you want to build your team around. And so I think getting an NFL coordinator, one that specifically, you know, is also probably going to be a plus recruiter, is not as, you know, is not as much of a no-no as like it used to be. So I think it's good. And then I'll counter that kind of with a concern, and I'll ask, you know, I think part of the story of Harbaugh's tenure so far has been that you have a little bit of a reaction, even an overreaction. You know, 2017, you overreact to slot fades and get a thousand long corners. And then, you know, there were several like periods of overreaction. And I wonder if you think that Harbaugh is going just the complete opposite direction from, you know, defensive, you know, schematic genius Don Brown, who tries to get it done with unheralded recruits, and just pushing the sliders all the way in the other direction to just like all recruiting. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
It does have that feel to a certain extent. There is kind of, you almost see this more happen with head coaches, where it's like, you know, Michigan goes from like total outsider Rich Rodriguez, you know, offensive scheme guy to rah-rah Michigan man Brady Hoke defense dude. And, you know, that felt like a severe overcorrection. I think it was the right idea, especially given the circumstances facing this program right now. to go young, to go in this direction. But it also, you can't help but notice that it does feel like that they're like bringing in the very opposite of Don Brown and Mike Sordich and I guess Bob Shoup. they're bringing in a human, which is the opposite of Bob Shoup in terms of safeties coaches doing their jobs and being present. Have we mentioned that Bob Shoup just wasn't there all last year? That was really weird, and it sucked.
Yeah, I mean, I'll spin that a little bit, which is to say, I agree that there's a serious risk of overreacting, and that it's possible that we hired two co-DCs who are going to be over their in over their heads, may not even know yet what they want to run, and that that could like spiral in some bad directions. I mean, who knows what'll happen? It's a mystery. I get excited for mysteries because there's always upside, right? I will say this though, my big fear with Harbaugh the last few years has been that he doesn't get what the problems are with Michigan football. And the defense this year certainly looked like the product of a group of guys, whether it was him or Brown or whoever, that just didn't seem to get it, like how to achieve their goals, how to get closer to beating Ohio State. This looks like a guy who gets it, which is like, all right, what we really need here is the horses. We need the DTs. We need the cornerbacks. We need every position to be as athletic and gifted and NFL caliber as possible. And that's how we get back into the running. And I think Jim's right, and I think that if this experiment were happening like a couple years ago, we would be ecstatic about this direction. I think a lot of our skepticism about it is just that it's year seven.
Yeah, no, I certainly agree that a lot of the worry is just that this may have come a couple years too late for it to really matter. Although you never know, maybe. A couple of these guys end up as holdovers at some point.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is kind of like a nice little, like, smorgasbord of like young, like assistant coaches for, Matt Campbell to pick from next year.
Exactly. And, you know, Matt Campbell has to fill out an offensive staff as well. And right now, Michigan, has not officially announced it. It does seem like there is at least one holdup, and right now I think we can be pretty sure of four spots. That is offensive coordinator Josh Gattis, obviously running backs coach Mike Hart, tight ends coach Sharon Moore, and offensive line coach Ed Warner. Gattis and Hart are absolutely locked in. Moore, I think there was a little bit of worry that he might take another job, I think at Oklahoma, but they warded that off. That doesn't seem to be a worry anymore. Warner seems to be in place. Interestingly enough, the guy who may be not necessarily a part of the staff as a holdover is Jay Harbaugh, who obviously will no longer be coaching running backs with Mike Hart here, but the thought was that he would take special teams. We may be recording this a day or two too early because the aforementioned Ronald Bellamy is coaching for a state championship for West Bloomfield tomorrow. And after his season ends, he might be looking at taking Jay Harbaugh's job with the staff. I would assume Jay Harbaugh leaving would be largely his own choice, since he's been one of Michigan's best assistant coaches the whole time he's been here, pretty much no matter which role he's been put in. I'd be happy to have Ron Bellamy on staff, but It definitely feel like a loss if they don't have Jay Harbaugh around. Overall, though, are we happy that they at least retain the guys that they retained with Jay Harbaugh? Obviously, still up in the air, maybe a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think. Look, Josh Gattis as an offensive coordinator has been, you know, hit or miss, more miss than hit, but I'm willing to write him a little bit of a pass last year just because so much, you know, so many injuries on the offensive line, and then replacing the offensive line as it was. I mean, you know, we don't need to go over this again, but I think that I'm still willing to, you know, I'm willing to believe that he can be a good offensive coordinator. He's a tremendous recruiter. Mike Hart's going to be a tremendous recruiter. Sharon Moore is a tremendous recruiter. And Ed Warner is Ed Warner, and, you know, we trust him. I will say that Ed Warner has not been officially extended yet, and there have been some rumblings that he may not, that I'm not going to say that he might be off staff, but just like he's gotten less of the, he's definitely going to be retained than some other coaches. So just keep an eye on that one. I have no idea what would be happening if he'd be off, if he lost his job, but I don't know. I will just say that it's like it hasn't been 100% confirmed.
Yeah, it's kind of tough to figure out a few different things with the staff, including like if you go to the team's official page right now, Ben McDaniels, who was the wide receivers coach and then more recently the quarterbacks coach the last couple of years, and who has been rumored by that did deserve some laughter. He has been stated to be on the way out by Sam Webb and other insiders. He's on the official page along with Warner, and Jay Harbaugh. They're showing a complete staff there, but notably the bios are copy and pasted from last year for the coaches who are quote unquote returning, and the new ones don't have bios yet. So this looks like just kind of a kind of half-assed Web update. And I don't think Ben McDaniels is going to be back.
As someone well-versed in my 9-to-5 job in like half-assed administrative updates, I know what it's like to copy and paste bios from one year to the next and kind of forget to double check. So understandable.
They'll get around to it as soon as it's official, probably.
Right.
Although the defense is official and Mike McDonald still neither has a bio, or I don't even think he's on Twitter. That's
love
an NFL
that.
Versus college difference right there. Get a Twitter account, man.
I love my one of my ostensible recruiters to not even have a Twitter.
I'm sure he'll come around. Sorry, Connor, I keep cutting you off.
Oh no, you didn't cut me off. I was just laughing at the Twitter thing. I mean, yeah, I Dan already said it. Like, here's the thing: we talked about this on our pod a while ago, and I think on this pod as well. The offensive staff last year was fairly well constructed. Ben McDaniels is pretty much a complete zero, doesn't recruit, didn't improve players, obviously needs to go, and we assume he is going. And I don't know if they're going to replace him or not, or if Jim is just going to coach quarterbacks. We don't know what the deal is there. But like, other than that, we love having Mike Hart come in because he's one of those guys that like this program desperately needs, guys who can help get the stench out of the walls, right? Who are going to like do the right combination of yelling at kids and connecting with kids to make the product on the field look like they're at least trying consistently and like, you know, cheering when a good play happens, for instance, things like that, trusting their teammates, trusting the coaches. And I think Hart is like, you know, he's that kind of guy, obviously. And he'll also be a good recruiter. He was a good recruiter at Indiana.
And a good running backs coach.
Yeah. And a good running backs coach. I mean, I'm thrilled with that hire. That's an A+ hire and an obvious hire. Yeah, and then Sherrod Moore, Josh Gattis, Ed Warner, none of them are unimpeachable, except maybe Warner in a sense, but like they all certainly recruit. And I don't think that I don't think the failings of the offense last year were that greatly due to the specific offensive staff so much as the holistic failings of the program and possibly the head coach and some player issues. But yeah,
we'll see. You did mention the potential for Harbaugh to coach quarterbacks. I think that's almost certainly the plan with what they've got constructed right now. And then that may be the reason why Jay Harbaugh's status is uncertain, is because Ronald Bellamy is a former wide receiver. So I assume if they bring him on staff, he could coach the wide receivers, and ideally you would have somebody doing that, and right now they don't. So that seems like, a piece that would make a certain amount of sense. And Bellamy would bring some connections to in-state high schools, since he's coming from a really excellent long run as Wes Bloomfield's coach. Coaching Donovan Edwards, which is, it obviously was able to have some talent at that program, is coaching for a state title. So he could be a good addition to the coaching staff, both in terms of has played the position that he would probably be coaching and has a decent amount of recruiting upside, connections in the state. It does seem like in-state connections are something that need to be prepared for Michigan a little bit. And so to have somebody on staff who can do that, as well as Mike Hart, who I think has some strong relationships forged with some of the high school coaches here from recruiting for both Western and Eastern Michigan, and then also Indiana, and having Michigan be part of his recruiting territory. So we'll see. I mean, I think for the however manyth straight year, the question is how much Jim Harbaugh meddles with the offense. Because I otherwise like the staff they have pretty much regardless of how the last spot turns out.
I will say Ron Bellamy's first order of business will be taking a nice fruit basket to Belleville.
Yes, yes, that'd be that'd be a good start.
I mean, he just beat them in the state playoffs, so maybe wait like a month on that. But after that,
let Jermaine Crowell, you know, chill a little bit, and then send the fruit basket.
He's in charge of just like, you know, not intentionally pissing off one of like three high schools that consistently produce 4-star recruits in the state.
We're not upset about recent things that have happened in this program at all. And on that note, we're going to, I think, end this discussion of the new coaching staff for now. We will probably revisit it again once the offensive staff has officially been completed and at least wrap up that little bit of the conversation. But for now, we are going to move on to potential transfer targets now that Michigan can actually, you know, target them and recruit them and bring them in.
When your plumbing breaks, you hire someone who knows how to fix plumbing. When your power goes out, you hire an electrician. When you are injured in an accident, you should hire someone with experience. Jason Blankenship, a Michigan law graduate, has over 20 years of litigation experience to help you. Jason has handled matters and venues across the state and country, from various circuit courts across the state through the Michigan Supreme Court and the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. Jason's experience in both federal and state courts makes him able to handle your complicated personal injury case. Before starting his own firm in 2014, Jason worked at a large plaintiff's firm, but he left in order to give his clients the personal attention you and your case deserve. Jason selects each case personally, and you will deal directly with Jason to resolve your case. The insurance companies have teams of lawyers on their side. You should have someone on your side, too. Call 248-533-0516. That's 248-533-0516. Or email Jason at blankenshiplawyer.com.
So, as mentioned before, Michigan can now actually start bringing in some transfers, which seems like a pretty important thing to do for a team with some massive holes at pretty important spots on the depth chart. I am looking at our show notes. Dan has written a list of needs in order by position. He's got 5 of them written down. Dan, run me through them real quick.
Yeah, so I would say number one with a bullet, and like not even that close, is corner. I mean, they need as many as they can take. We have exactly one corner that we know can play a little bit on, like we know that like pretty much half the corners in the roster are not good. Like sorry to Jalen Perry and Vincent Gray and you know, I guess Sammy Faustin and like what, but like, and then there's like two converted receivers and Donovan Green Warren, who, you know, everyone says is slow, and a short king, Andre Selden, who, you know, I'll reserve.
I have faith in our short king, Andre Selden.
We have faith in our short kings. But yeah, I mean, just like as many corners as you can get. And there's some good ones in the portal right now. Defensive tackle is number two. Did you have a comment on that?
Oh, I was just guffawing and just wanting to say, like, as many corners as you can take, get a 40 time on them first with your own wash. Like, they need to be able to run. That's the main thing.
Yeah, the thing we learned with corners is that's not a position you can scheme around when you don't have good ones. There's no hiding that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Next on the list, I would say is defensive tackle, which I actually think, you know, better spot than we were last year. You know, I still have Hinton started to flash. Jeter seems serviceable, and it seems like he's sticking around. And then you've got who's the German kid?
Julius Welshoff.
Yeah, Welshoff. Welshoff looked pretty good too. And then, you know, you think, hopefully, I think Mozzie Smith, you know, and under a new coaching staff that maybe values big fat boys more, he can potentially flourish.
Let him embrace it.
Yeah.
So I would say that's a nice five that you can like reasonably say could be contributors, but they still did not take any in either this class yet and the previous class. So, you know, how, again, this is another one where it's like, hey, if they got like one or two with potentially even like, you know, a couple years of eligibility, you know, they should definitely take some. And then next I would say, for like immediate needs, I would say like linebackers that can play next year. I like the young linebackers in this program, but it didn't seem like they were ready last year. And McGrone's gone, and Josh Ross has just not been the same player since he was a sophomore. So, you know, whoever they can get there at linebacker. Defensive end, another one where like one or two guys that can play next year would probably be good. Not a whole lot of true pass rushing on this roster right now. And then the last one I wrote was quarterback question mark. And I would say like maybe if you can get the right guy, but you know, otherwise let's just let JJ and Cade, you know, fight it out.
Hey, we're not writing off Joe Melton yet. We're not writing off Joe.
You're right.
No,
yeah, sorry.
I mean, we're not. But I think like what's tricky about quarterback at Michigan is that they really kind of skipped a class because God bless Dan Vellari. I don't think he's going to be ready to be a contributor next year, and he might have to be, especially if, you know, Cade or Milton. And I think Milton is a very possible transfer. Wouldn't blame him at all.
Mm-hmm.
And you need three quarterbacks that can play at any given time, as Michigan learned this year. So like the problem though is that you're probably not going to be able to get a guy who's very good and proven because those guys want to know they're going to start. And Michigan has at least two guys who are potentially at least serviceable Big Ten starters in Cade and JJ. And again, I'm not writing off Milton. The best scenario for this team next year is that Milton, like, you know, jumps back up the depth chart and has a renaissance. I hope that happens. But anyway, that was too much, but I'm just...
You know, it's this guy with the transfer portal today who, you know, could potentially fit in there.
Are you talking about Lombardi?
Dylan McCaffrey.
Yeah. Oh, DeCaffrey.
he finally entered officially today. So in case anybody was holding out hope that for some reason he would decide to come back, not happening. he's definitely gone. That could be an interesting spot because, I don't know if the coaches would necessarily want to put the fate of maybe all of their jobs in the hands of a true freshman. At the same time, bringing in somebody who's new to the program and turning the keys over to them is pretty scary too. So could be an interesting choice there. As for actual specific targets, is there anybody especially at those corner DT positions. Is there somebody that's jumped out maybe from, like, I don't know, somewhere around Knoxville, Tennessee, to anybody so far in this transfer cycle that's still actually on the board?
So currently in the I'm looking at 24/7's transfer portal tracker. There are, you know, there are former four-star cornerbacks. We've got Elijah Gates from UCLA. UCLA has a lot of crossover in terms of who they recruit with Michigan. So, you know, potential there. Nigel Knott from ECU is transferring. And then Jalen Green transferring from Texas.
And then also,
yeah, exactly. Like, some of these guys, I think, definitely will probably have relationships with Linguist. So those are a couple of names in the portal right now. I'm totally drawing a blank on one more that they actually mentioned the other day. So, but I'll let
the Houston guy, Colin Samuel, or like,
yeah, I mean, I know that he was mentioned, but there was someone else, and this is bad radio. So I will just stop my guessing right now.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that jumps out to me there is that Colin Samuel and Jalen Green are both Texas guys, and it sounds like Mo Linguist knows every coach and every, like, specifically DB pipeline in Texas. So go with God, man. Get them both if you can. That'd be great.
Yeah, the only one that I really want to add here is at the defensive tackle position is the Central Michigan transfer, Muhammad Diallo was only a three-star coming out of high school, but he is 6'4", 320. That is meat, and they need it. So if that guy is at all viable, he's from close by, I assume he'd take a look. You know, there are a couple other ones that I'm looking at. Malcolm Robinson from Minnesota, so Big Ten caliber, and is immediately eligible already. That I wouldn't mind at all. Otherwise, I am starting to throw darts at names. So I will also do the let's stop that bad radio thing and move on. I think the other one would be, like, if you can find, like, a Mike Dana level defensive end. And what is devastating is when you click on defensive ends in the transfer portal, the first name that comes up is Luigi Villain. So that's fun.
Yeah, I mean, that's depressing. I will throw out there really quickly that there are some really sick linebackers in the transfer portal that Michigan probably has a shot at, namely Treshawn Hayward from Western Michigan, who's, like, grew up a Michigan fan. I don't think he's committed anywhere yet. Henry To'oto'o from Tennessee. Like, these are both All-American caliber guys. The Tennessee guy, mm-hmm. To'oto'o, All-American caliber in the portal. And I know Michigan's already contacted him. So, like, linebacker's less of a need, but, like, those are some really impact players that could be out there for them.
I was going to say Koravis Crouch. Well, I'm totally butchering that name. But that was a guy also from Tennessee, also a former five-star that Michigan thought they were going to land until Tennessee somehow, you know, flipped him late which seems to be a little bit Quaveris Crouch. So, you know, weird how they flipped him really late there. Might have had something to do with an unnamed, fast food restaurant.
One other guy who might have had a McMuffin convince him to come to Tennessee is Eric Gray, who Michigan had one time committed in their class. He was an all-purpose back. I loved his film. He's been productive at Tennessee. He's a guy I've had an eye on for NFL fantasy dynasty purposes. Could kind of feel like Michigan obviously has a loaded backfield. You've got Zach Charbonnet transferring out, possibly because he is seeing the writing on the wall in terms of the other guys taking carries and touches from him. Michigan has some nice versatile players who can do the, you know, split out in the slot thing, catch the ball out of the backfield, which is part of Gray's appeal. But he's also just really talented. So, you know, if they decide that they want to add somebody and he's open to listening to their pitch, I wouldn't mind taking a shot there, even though it is probably the farthest thing from a position of need at this point on this team, but you know, shoot or shoot, right? So
yeah, and then I mean I think one thing I'll just say about, you know, just generally, it does feel like Michigan was somewhat hesitant to take transfers in before, and that seems to definitely have changed in terms of the way that, you know, certain comments that Harbaugh's made about, you know, we're going to hit the transfer portal hard or whatever. And, you know, and then also from in the same category of, philosophy changing, you know, it does seem like even if some of these defensive tackles aren't necessarily like All-American guys, it does seem like we're in a place now where Michigan is willing to take just 300-plus pound guys to plug holes. That's something that's been mentioned by Sam Webb. And, you know, I think that's, it's just one of those things that's a little, not to get too much into, you know, rehashing the Don Brown stuff, but it really does feel like there was not something that Don Brown valued, was being able to just eat blocks. And, I think that there's definite potential for Michigan to improve just by virtue of actually having that, you know, on their roster.
Yeah, the irony, the cruel irony of Don Brown not valuing guys who can eat blocks was seeing Michigan defensive tackles get paraded several yards down the field by offensive linemen. So that was cool. I think we can wrap up the transfer discussion just because the positions of need are obvious. The nature of the transfer portal is pretty nebulous, so either we're pulling names straight out from like Sam Webb posts, or we're just, you know, waiting for stuff to happen right now. And names are still entering the portal, as we're seeing with the tremendous influx of former Tennessee Volunteers that just happened over the past week. So there'll probably be a fair amount of movement to come. And hopefully some pretty immediate movement for Michigan, because it's time to start filling out this roster, especially on defense. With that, we are going to wrap up discussion of football. I'm sure you guys are all extremely sad to hear that. And on the other side of this break, we're going to bring Alex in and talk a little Maryland basketball. We have lost one and gained one. Alex, how are you doing, man?
Doing all right, Ace. I'd like to apologize to our listeners in advance if you hear a small clanging or clattering noise. My apartment here in the castle in Grand Rapids has some spooky sounds, so it might be the ghosts here, but I'm slowly going insane. Other than that, things are going all right.
It might be the ancient Indian burial ground. Who knows for sure?
Right. Yeah, if you'd like to learn more about the Grand Castle, which is a 14-story concrete monstrosity in West Michigan, check out my blog, grandvillain.com. I moved into the castle because I have a broken brain. I've been writing about it, and I've been publishing a couple things lately. You should check it out.
Don't sell yourself short, Alex. It's a beautifully broken brain.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right, so... Alex is here. Dan's still hanging around. Connor bailed because he doesn't like good things, I guess.
As a Duke basketball fan, Connor doesn't.
Oh,
like
you,
good
oh no!
You let
can't
it out.
Say it. It's a state secret. They're not going to listen to the podcast anymore.
Well, the cat's out of the bag now. We can't do anything like edit that out or re-record parts of the segment. Nope. It's out there. Connor's a Dukie. That's That's on the podcast record now. Sorry, Connor. We are going to start with the good stuff, which was Michigan's victory on Tuesday over Maryland, 87-63. This one never really closed. Michigan jumps out to a 17-4 lead. Doesn't really look back, even though Hunter Dickinson only scores 3 points this entire game. Everybody else feasts because Maryland is so focused on the interior. Michigan shoots 12 for 24 from three-point land in this game. Also shoots over 50% on twos. Pretty much does whatever they want on offense. And meanwhile, Maryland cannot get anything going. It's a total brick fest from beyond the arc, which is a enjoyable departure from the first time these two teams matched up. They have a lot of unsuccessful forays to the rim against Hunter Dickinson early on. So this was a very nice bounce back from the game that we will briefly discuss later, which was Michigan's ugly loss at Minnesota. So first of all, Alex, just what were your kind of big takeaways from this game, and what did you think they showed, especially coming off of that Gopher loss?
It was nice to see them right the ship after the Minnesota loss. You know, that was more of the Michigan we've kind of grown accustomed to. We are a pretty bad matchup for Maryland with Dickinson in the post. Their best perimeter player, Eric Ayala, seemed to be limited by injury. He came off the bench. And, you know, Maryland, that's a really tough game on the road for them. So to see Michigan cruise to a comfortable victory was a nice thing, even though Dickinson, you know, wasn't quite as dominant of a scorer as he was in the first matchup.
And on that note, Dan wrote in a question here that is worth asking, which is, do you feel like Dickinson is in a bit of a slump, or do you feel like he's just kind of doing the right thing given the context around him, specifically how Maryland was defending him, at least in this game?
I think for Maryland, and to a lesser degree, Minnesota, it's just a lot different when, you know, earlier in the season, we said, oh, you know, Dickinson's good playing out of the double team. And that's one thing when you occasionally see it and can make a read. It's another thing when, you know, the entire team's defensive game plan is oriented around double teaming you and preventing you from scoring. Like, it felt like Maryland was like, you know what, we could lose by 30, but Dickinson's not going to score. He's not going to be the one to do it to us. And they really sold out to stop him. Michigan hit a fair amount of open threes, and in the end, I think he was doing the right thing. I think he does get a little bit flustered when they send a hard double at him. Sometimes, you know, he can kind of throw the passes into arms and turn the ball over. But overall, for a freshman big, I think he's handling, you know, that new focus from defenses that really orient him as the main thing to stop.
Yeah, I was actually really happy to see him not really forcing it against Maryland. Minnesota was a little bit of a different story, and obviously, you know, Juwan Howard benches him for a little bit in that one, and, you know, turnovers were a big problem there. But Maryland, you know, was sending hard doubles, and he was very patient against them. Only had one turnover, also only had one assist, but that does not fairly reflect his passing. You know, he's still making really nice reads, throwing hard skip passes, getting the ball moving around the perimeter, and Michigan's three-point number can in large part be credited to Dickinson in this game. You also have the return of Eli Brooks from what was apparently a pretty mild foot strain. He had missed the Minnesota game, and Michigan very clearly felt that absence. In this game, you've got Mike Smith and Brooks combining for 11 assists and 3 turnovers. And at least in the last couple games, it feels like Smith has turned a corner a bit in regards to taking care of the ball. Do you feel the same way? I mean, I should ask that before just going on that as a substitute.
Yeah, I mean, his performance against Minnesota was very interesting. 0 points and 10 assists for Mike Smith in that game. He had a tough time finishing around the rim against Minnesota's length. And, you know, Dickinson, even in that game against Robbins, that's a tough matchup. Like, Dickinson kind of owned him in the first matchup, but then Robbins kind of got him back in Minneapolis. As for Smith, I do think that he's getting a better command of reads in the pick and roll game, whether that's a skip pass to the opposite corner, if the defender is tagging off the wing, trying to hit the big man, he's trying to keep the passes high. I think he's been doing a better job of that. And, you know, it's better for him, too, when there's another ball handler out there who can create a little bit, I think, with Eli Brooks. So giving him the opportunity to work off the ball and make passes, attacking closeouts as well, his distribution's been good the last couple games.
Yeah, I mean, he's been, I think, much improved, and he's such an excellent spot-up shooter, too, that, like you said, when he's afforded the ability to play off the ball, that does really add something to Michigan's offense, because even if he's not taking it and shooting it, he's got a lot of gravity. I mean, that's something I've noticed going back and looking back through the last few games, is that opponents really respect his jump shot. They know that he's, you know, on catch and shoots about a 40%, 45% 3-point shooter. So that's something that you can't leave him be at all. To the point where there was a play, I think on Michigan's first basket, when Franz Wagner was curling around for a layup, where the defender on Smith in the near corner could have helped down on Wagner and actually took a step closer to Smith on the drive and didn't. I mean, clearly was coached to. He was not allowed to help off Smith there. So there is definitely some promise with the guards. And meanwhile, got big scoring performances out of both Isaiah Livers and Franz Wagner. Wagner was more the guy able to attack inside the arc. He goes 4-for-8 from two, adds a 3-pointer, and 4 free throws to his total. Also a few assists. It really feels like his all-around game is coming together to a point that we should probably be really enjoying these games as we are able to watch them, I would say.
Yeah, you would think that the NBA would be pretty interested in Wagner with his positional size on the wing, his quickness, his long arms, and his defensive instincts. To your point, he is kind of showing a more well-rounded offensive game. He's making some good passes in the pick and roll. He's, you know, showing the ability to finish around the rim. If I was an NBA GM, I would definitely consider him a first-round prospect. Think he could potentially work his way up into the middle of the first round. And, yeah, it'll be nice to see, you know, kind of him continue to progress across this season, because it seems like he's improving a little bit every game. But, you know, beyond this season, he could be making a lot of money at the next level.
Yeah, I think he's been projected as high as 13th, depending on where you look. Meanwhile, one guy who we are pretty darn we're sure he's going to be gone to the NBA after this year, considering he thought about it last year. Isaiah Livers goes 4-for-5 from downtown, makes all 6 of his free throws, is carrying a 50-40-90, not just across the, you know, entire season, leads the team with 20 points in this one. A lot of this was opened up by Dickinson, but he's just such a brilliant catch and shoot player that it was really nice to see it fall for him in this game. And just a lot of what he was able to do in terms of playing off of Dickinson that I like to see is that he was willing to reset a little bit farther behind the 3-point line than some guys want to venture out. And by extending that range, when you've got somebody on the interior who's drawing as many doubles as Dickinson, it's really hard to get out and contest Livers' shot. And when Livers is getting uncontested three-pointers, they tend to go in. So, you know, maybe 80% is not the expectation on a normal night, but 4-for-5 wasn't exactly a surprise, I would say.
But the quality of looks that he and Mike Smith were getting, you know, you would expect Michigan to be pretty productive from behind the 3-point line. They did a really good job of moving the ball after they kicked it out from the post, and Livers was the beneficiary of a lot of those open looks. And it's a great 3-point shooting team, you know, between Livers, Smith, Brooks, Brown, you know, even Wagner to an extent. you have a lot of shooting ability from behind the arc. And yeah, Livers played a good all-around game against Maryland as well. You know, it wasn't him just knocking down shots. He had three assists as well. All as always, active defensively, good rim protector for playing the four. And yeah, it's easy to take him for granted if he's not scoring, if he's not knocking down those threes, but more so than early in his career where he was more of just a gunner, he's shown a more advanced offensive game, which is something that you kind of tend to expect from players who are, you know, big time recruits coming out of high school, play on a good team early in their career, play a role, and then, you know, by the time that they're seniors, you kind of expect them to reach their final form of, you know, what kind of player they're going to be at the college level, and Livers seems to be reaching that ceiling.
Yeah, he had a couple nice driving kicks in this one, notably did not turn the ball over, which has been a little bit of an increasing problem as he's expanded his offensive repertoire a bit, but he's still keeping those turnover numbers relatively in check. In this game, they were totally absent. So I thought that was one of his better games of the season.
I really liked how he really shot when he got the ball open. You know, like a couple times this year, like that's one nitpick we've had is that he'll have open shots and he decides to drive anyway. And I really liked that every time he caught the ball with, you know, I mean, it seems easy to say, but every time he caught the ball wide open from the arc, it was just going up. And, you know, it felt like that's the best way, you know, for him to be used in this offense.
Absolutely, and that's not something that Michigan can necessarily take for granted. They can take that for granted with Shaundy Brown, who takes all five of his shots from beyond the arc in this game. That's pretty much his main contribution other than his normal strong defense. He does pick up four fouls, so he's kind of limited to 23 minutes in this one. Not that Michigan really needed him to play any more than that. Where we start getting to some interesting rotational stuff is at first at the center position, you've got Austin Davis back in the lineup. He gets 10 minutes, goes 4-for-5 from the field, does get a block and a steal, also, let's say, gives up some buckets. So, I mean, it was a very Austin Davis performance. I think it's fair to put it that way. And then Brandon Johns gets 13 minutes, scores 11 points. This is one of his strongest games, pulls down a couple offensive rebounds, does have a couple turnovers, but I loved his aggressiveness in this game. Some of it is played next to Austin Davis at the four, a little of it at center. And Alex, I want to hear kind of your thoughts on I don't necessarily want to do the critique Juwan Howard's rotation thing because you're working these players in, you're trying to see what you have. So I think that's kind of a silly exercise, but going forward, how do you want to see the backup center position sort of take shape?
Yeah. And I completely agree that I think complaining about the rotation when the team's 12-1 and in the top five, I don't really buy that. Of course, we all think we could maybe tweak it so that it could be a little bit better. I know a lot of fans want to take minutes away from Davis and give them to Johns. It was interesting in the Maryland game specifically with Dickinson only scoring 3 points that Michigan's backup front court would combine for 20. It really shows how much the Terrapins emphasize stopping Dickinson in particular. Davis, it really was a funny matchup with Dante Scott. They were kind of giving each other buckets at both ends. Having that back-to-the-back or back-to-the-basket scoring presence on the bench unit is kind of nice, especially, you know, depending on who else is out there, it might be a little hard to generate offense with some of those looks. And Davis, you know, better on offense than defense for sure. As for Johns, it was nice to see him be a little bit more assertive offensively. I think his role is just kind of necessarily limited by the way that the team is shaking out. Davis will get some minutes at the backup five. I think you'll see Johns with some minutes at the five as well. But seeing him just really attack the glass and get open corner threes, that's what you want to see from him on the offensive end, regardless of whether he's playing the four or the five. And defensively, I think Johns has really, really improved from his freshman year. I'm not really sure exactly where his block and steal rates are, but his rim protecting presence has been big for Michigan's defense. So, you know, with Davis potentially getting exposed by backup bigs that could space the floor a little bit, you would want to see more Johns. But I do think that that strategy can come at a cost for opponents as well if Davis is backing them down to the post.
Yeah, I actually have a question about, like, as a non-basketball guy, I always hear that, like, oh, well, you know, you can't play, like, a traditional big against a stretch five, right? So my question is, like, if it's a mismatch one way, why is it not a mismatch the other way? And, like, why wouldn't you just allow that? Like, if Davis can back up some, you know, stretch big that isn't necessarily going to be, you know, have the muscle to, like, stick with him in the post, why not just let him go to work and, you know, live with it on the other end? And that's, like, a genuine question. Like,
That is a good question. I think NBA-type mentality kind of seeps into that discussion at the college level where, you know, a traditional big cannot guard in space against most NBA teams. Players are way too good at making shots. There's way too much room for them to operate offensively. And, you know, they can get picked at by dragging them away from the rim and putting them in a pick and roll or a pick and pop every single time. It doesn't really work like that at the college level. I think, you know, most teams' backup bigs are frankly just not pretty good. So Davis, you know, if he is guarding an ostensible stretch big, making that guy hit a couple shots, you know, that's not something that's a given in college like it is in the NBA. And yeah, you know, ultimately we like to look at, oh, you know, post-up offense is inherently more efficient than, say, a catch-and-shoot three, but we've seen with Hunter Dickinson in particular that the gravity that a good post scorer can provide can also open up things offensively in a way that the, you know, synergy numbers might undervalue perhaps. So you see Davis kind of provides that same impact as Dickinson. You know, he's not quite as tall, but another big body, another guy that you can throw into the post. And Michigan really is a team that wears out opponents in the paint. So to have that presence, yeah, sure, he might get exposed on some pick and pops, and you don't want him switching onto guards on the perimeter, but he does create some gravity, and he can get you a bucket, which is nice to see from a backup big.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it also unleashes Johns at the four a little bit, and Johns is a very interesting player there as well, in addition to at center. But I don't know, I still want to see Johns more at the five. I just think because he's surprised me with his ability to hold up as kind of a traditional defensive center, even playing a little drop coverage against the pick and roll, walling up at the rim, you know, as a shot blocker. His block rate is almost at six in Big Ten play. And he's got his career 3-point percentage up to 38. You know, he's only attempted eight this year, so I don't want to cite the 63% mark he's got this season as anything that's actually real. But I mean, he's a very efficient and effective offensive player when he's being assertive, even with a pretty elevated turnover rate. And a lot of those are moving screens and stuff where it just seems like, you know, travels and stuff where if he got a little bit more time, was allowed to have the game come to him more, those might get worked out of his game a little bit. The trouble is just finding the minutes in this rotation. Which is why I want to see him a little bit more at the 10, but at the 5. But it is kind of, I mean, Austin Davis has also earned his minutes, especially when you're, you know, in a game like this one against Maryland where you've got a comfortable lead. You know, trading baskets with them at that point was totally fine. And Dont'a Scott did not finish with a particularly efficient game overall either. So, this was a situation where I'm not going to pick at Juwan Howard's rotation in terms of what he decided to put out there. But it is interesting looking forward. You know, if Johns is this confident with his 3-point shot and this good on defense, I think he holds his value more once you get against the higher end teams on the schedule than Austin Davis will. But that'll depend on the matchup as well. I'm going to save the question about the other bit of rotation stuff for after this next break, when we are going to, unfortunately, discuss the Minnesota game a little bit.
When your plumbing breaks, you hire someone who knows how to fix plumbing. When your power goes out, you hire an electrician. When you are injured in an accident, you should hire someone with experience. Jason Blankenship, a Michigan law graduate, has over 20 years of litigation experience to help you. Jason has handled matters in venues across the state and country, from various circuit courts across the state through the Michigan Supreme Court and the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. Jason's experience in both federal and state courts makes him able to handle your complicated personal injury case. Before starting his own firm in 2014, Jason worked at a large plaintiff's firm, but he left in order to give his clients the personal attention you and your case deserve. Jason selects each case personally, and you will deal directly with Jason to resolve your case. The insurance companies have teams of lawyers on their side. You should have someone on your side, too. Call 248-533-0516. That's 248-533-0516. Or email jason@blankenshiplawyer.com. All right, the Minnesota game happened. Every team kind of has one of these, or, you know, sometimes two or three, sometimes more than that if you're not very good over the course of the season. You play a clunker. If you're missing a starter like Michigan was, you tend to also lose that clunker. So Michigan not only has the combination of is not only missing a starter in Eli Brooks, but they also just have an awful shooting performance that goes 6-for-22 from downtown. I don't think that was necessarily on a bunch of bad looks. The area where more seemed like they felt Eli Brooks's absence was that they're only 16-for-34 inside the arc. Mike Smith is 0-for-6 in this game. He's kind of pressing a little bit in terms of looking for his shot sometimes. Does have the 10 assists, like we mentioned in the last segment. Just not a particularly good game for anybody. I mean, we talked about this a little bit on the MGO podcast, how this was just a bad time for literally everyone to have kind of a subpar offensive game. You get Dickinson benched, you have the 20 turnovers. So I guess before I get to the specific lineup-related question that came from this game, Alex, I'll ask you, do you have anything to add to kind of the overall feels that we had coming out of this one, which I think was burn the tape and move on?
Yeah, I think this is definitely a game where you want to have some feelings ball or vibes takes. I would give Minnesota some credit for Michigan's poor offensive performance, especially on the heels of Michigan's beatdown at the Chrysler Center. You know, it was very tough to see in the first half so many open shots not go down, and then once, you know, Michigan started getting careless with the ball, which that is kind of growing as a concern with this team, to be honest. They're giving it away as much as anybody in Big Ten play. And Minnesota, Liam Robbins came out like a man possessed. But yeah, ultimately, burn the tape. It was a loss on the road against a good team. That happens in college basketball. There was no way Michigan was going to go undefeated through the Big Ten. And, you know, with your starting shooting guard out, it's already tough to win on the road.
Yeah, and with that starting shooting guard out, we got 9 minutes of action from Zeb Jackson in this game. Looked rough in this one. Only has 1 point. Goes 0-for-3 on three-pointers. Has a couple turnovers. Does have one nice assist in there. Was a little up and down. That said, I actually thought he looked okay on his defensive rotations. Did blow one, I think, but overall wasn't really a noticeable major negative on that end. And then I thought he carried that into a pretty decent performance, getting about the same amount of playing time against Maryland. And it would be absolutely massive for this team to have a third guard, you know, true guard, because Shondi Brown is definitely a wing, emerge in the rotation. You know, if we learned anything from this Minnesota game, it's that Michigan has a tough time functioning with just one true guard out there for the whole game, and that Eli Brooks is very important to this team. But if they can get an emerging contribution from Zeb Jackson, who does kind of fit the profile of a guy who'd maybe come on more towards, you know, the latter half of his freshman year, if the light's going to come on during his freshman season, that would be huge for this team. So if there was a bit of a silver lining to Eli Brooks being out, maybe it's that, you know, that kind of gets Jackson on track a little bit.
Yeah, I think having him in the mix in terms of what Michigan has in the backcourt would definitely benefit the team in the long run. He has the profile of a guy who can play at this level. He has a lot of size at the position. He moves well out there. He has good length. And, you know, to your point, he does look pretty good defensively. But, you know, it's tough because if those threes aren't falling, teams are going to sink off of him. He should just keep shooting from out there, and who knows, he could figure into to the picture later down the road.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing that Juwan Howard's looking ahead and you know, especially seeing after how they played without Eli at Minnesota, that he's trying to find a third guard, because I mean, there would be nothing worse than a season-ending injury to one of the two guards we have on this team, or if one of them gets in foul trouble, you know, in the tournament, and ends what's like been a really promising year just on, you know, some bad luck. So I think it's good that he's trying to find someone that's, you know, serviceable there. And I agree with Alex that if I'm coaching Zeb, I would just tell him to keep shooting those if they're gonna leave him open. And it's not like they've looked horrendous. Like, it doesn't look great, but they're, you know, he's not bricking them. He's hitting the rim. I don't know. I'm not a basketball guy, as I've made clear, but like.
No, but that's actually like an indicator is like, I know it doesn't sound great when that this is the way you have to gauge it, but how much you miss by, and especially like whether you're missing, if you're missing to the left or right, that's not a great sign, but this is more about just dialing in the distance, it seems like, for Jackson. And I agree with both of you guys that just having him keep shooting through it is the way to go there. He does, and he's got the other thing we haven't mentioned is that, you know, both guards on this team are seniors. So, you know, if you're looking for towards next year as well, Michigan is likely to have an all-new backcourt. I mean, we'll see what happens with the extra year of eligibility for everybody if Smith or Brooks decides to come back. But Jackson is almost certainly going to be a very big part of that backcourt, and you want to see what you have in that guy in addition to, hopefully developing him for the end of this year because, as we very much saw in this game, it'd be nice for Michigan to have another guard who can have some impact out there. And Jackson does look like, you know, he hit a pull-up jumper in one of these games recently that looked pretty nice in garbage time. You know, he hasn't necessarily had a chance to look great when he's out there with the bench mob. You know, that's not really playing time that we should necessarily be drawing much of any sort of conclusions from. And the fact that Juwan Howard is willing to put him out there with the other players and that he clearly has at least a little bit of chemistry with them, I mean, he's definitely been running with them a little bit in practice, and hopefully that'll start coming through in games. There's clearly at least some level of trust there, and hopefully that will grow as the season goes on, because now that Austin Davis is back and you've got Brandon Johns coming on, that's really the one question for this team is, do they have the guard depth? And Jackson would be a really nice answer to that question if he can break through and kind of come through on the athletic promise that we know he has. But knocking down a few shots would definitely be nice. Before we sign off, any big picture takeaways from the last week about the basketball team, Alex?
No. Frankly, games like the Minnesota game happen, like you said, at least once a year, to even the best teams. And yeah, burn the game film, move on, and hopefully Michigan can string together some more wins to stay right up there with Iowa at the top of the table.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was nice that you know, at least that Minnesota game came off of Michigan's best game of the year and was immediately followed by another blowout. So the cloud did not linger for long over the program from that one, and there is also a pretty solid built-in reason for that loss with Eli Brooks not being out there. Not that it doesn't show that there are some things to work on, especially with regards to guard depth and having the offense function better when Brooks is not on the floor, because you don't want to have to rely on any one person to make everything work. But this is still a very good team. Do not let the Minnesota game fool you. They may not be quite on the level of Gonzaga and Baylor, but this is still a team that's got Big Ten championship and, yeah, definitely Final Four potential. We can just go ahead and say Final Four potential. I'm not holding back on that one anymore.
They are literally number four in KenPom, so I feel like you're pretty safe to say that.
Yeah, not going out on too thin a limb there with that one.
The story of this week was Hunter Dickinson moving from a bucket to more of a problem. And that's a necessary graduation for him, and I'm extremely happy with it.
Yes, you might have noticed I made a little nod to that on the front page post that I put up today about Dickinson in his run without scoring at the beginning of the Maryland game. So, yes, transitioning from a bucket to a problem. Big ups to Hunter Dickinson for that. He might even be a full-blown bucket problem. with that, we are going to sign off. Thank you to Alex, Connor, and Dan for joining me. Thank you, as always, to the law offices of E. Jason Blankenship for presenting this podcast. We will catch you next week. Cue the music.